We're on a mission to help founders hit product market fit faster. We do this by interviewing founders that have been there. I'm your host, Adam O'Donnell. This podcast is put together by Zendesk for Startups. We offer 6 months free of Zendesk customer support suite for qualified product-oriented companies. Zubin, welcome to Sit Down Startup Founder Podcast. I am super excited to have you here. You've raised well over $100 million building Bridget, and I'm excited to kind of unpack your story. But if you could first just help us understand, where did you grow up? And then how did you get that journey going to becoming a founder?
Sure. First of all, thank you so much for having me. I believe you're in one of my favorite cities in the world, San Francisco. I spent my first year working there. I would start there at 9 o'clock in the morning, and the office would finally let me go home at about 4:30 in the morning the next day. So yes, I have lots of fond, but some not lots of fond memories of one of the greatest cities in the world, which is San Francisco. But to answer your question, Adam, at the end of the day, my background is I came here as an immigrant, and what was surprising was that despite the United States then and now being the single wealthiest country in the world, you have about 3/4 of our population sadly living paycheck to paycheck, which is mind-boggling. And when I came here as a college student, unfortunately, I ended up living paycheck to paycheck, despite the fact that my single mother was sending me money, pretty much on a monthly basis, combined with the fact that I had two jobs and a scholarship to make ends meet. Despite that, I would end up eating Snickers for dinner every now and then because I was so, so worried about overdrafting. And that fundamental pain when I came here dating myself now over 20 years ago, unfortunately hasn't changed. And that was one of the main reasons why I got together with my co-founder to start Bridget. And our company, in essence, is a financial health app. And our goal is to help make people's lives a lot better from the financial side. So what we do is we've got a holistic set of tools which help people budget and get financial literacy tools as well, being able to get paycheck advances so they don't end up overdrafting, that same pain that I just described 20 years ago, right before I got to San Francisco, as well as being able to build your credit score through saving. And when I look at the last year in particular, I mean, you can talk about whatever funding we've done, et cetera, it's all insignificant because in the cumulative parts of our company, in terms of since we've started our company, last year we helped overall save our users over $1 billion in those same fees that I experienced it in overdrafts and other banking field. That to us is the reason why we do what we do.
That is really cool. And you understand that pain. And it's like, you just probably needed someone to just kind of believe in you in those early days and like give you a break just to have that margin to be able to start doing all the cool things that you're now doing. And it's like unfair that a lot of people don't get that chance.
It is mind-boggling, again, sorry to repeat myself, that we live in the wealthiest country in the world. You've got well over 100 million, 150 million Americans living paycheck to paycheck. And unfortunately, that number has only been increasing. Most people are thin file or no file credit score, which means the credit agencies can't effectively risk score those individuals. Plus, to add insult to injury, most of us don't have any savings or have a hard time even coming up with $500. That is where we are today. And our core focus was to use next generation technology. So think about the information in your bank account instead of an archaic FICO system or archaic credit scoring system, which by the way is great if you need to borrow $1 million for a house in New York City. It's just not very effective for the use cases that we've just talked about, which is helping people bridge the gap between paychecks.
That's really cool. I'm glad to hear you tackling that problem. Can you help me understand, being an immigrant moving to the US, what was that decision like? Was it even a decision or did your parents do it? Just help us understand that.
No, I mean, fortunately, I grew up in a family that valued education more than anything else. And I remember asking my mom on my 12th birthday that, hey, can you send me to the United States to study? Because the education system, at least as looking from 8,000 miles away, it seemed a lot more sophisticated than places like India for certain things that I wanted to study, specifically things like economics. And she said, sure, but just be ready for this. You're going to have to need a scholarship because we can't afford for you to go to the United States. So, but the want and the will was always there because my grandfather had actually studied here in the United States in the 1940s, including getting his PhD here. So that was, I was very much tuned to doing whatever I needed to do to get a scholarship. And fortunately, I went to the University of Chicago, which is still one of the happiest days of my life when I got that email saying, congratulations, we would love to have you.
Oh, that's really cool. It's like you had that vision. You knew that it was possible because you'd already seen someone in your family do it that you looked up to. So you just prioritized your life in those early days, middle school, high school, it sounds like.
Very much so. Fortunately got some grades, was able to convince a couple of colleges that they could take a chance on me. And that was the start of my entrepreneurial journey. In fact, I actually started a company when I was in college. My mom kind of almost had a heartbreak because I went back to India. Again, this is the early days of the internet. We're talking about the year 2000, which obviously has lots of connotations in internet land right before the crash. But I left college, took a sabbatical from college, went to India, and I was a 19-year-old starting a company. And that's kind of where my bug really, really started. It was like, hey, I can manage people kind of, but more importantly, how do you use an idea, which quite frankly, a lot of people can have, and take an idea and make sure you're adding value to your end audience and manage a team to execute that. So those small building blocks were established when I was 19.
That's really cool. Well, so you eventually got to San Francisco. What was that decision like? What brought you to San Francisco? I know you're not here now, but in the early days.
Well, it's the center of techland in the world. So one of the things that I decided was, as I pointed out, I wanted to study economics. So some element of business economics. And at the end of the day, I wanted to, at some point in time, be in the world of finance and tech. And I couldn't find a better place in the world to go there except San Francisco. And what I did was I took a job at an investment bank, hence the long hours that we discussed a little bit earlier. And subsequently, there was some of the foundations of me working in a bank to understand how finance works for tech companies and financial technology companies, which obviously Bridget is, and get the learning, the important learnings of what investors look for in a company, what are the interesting things to try to find product market fit from an outside, but also, quite frankly, understand how banks work, because what Bridget is doing today is trying to take away fee pools from the bank and actually help people, which banks have historically been taking advantage of.
Yeah, I love that just fundamental, like you're doing the right thing as well, and you understand it. So that makes a lot of sense. Well, on your journey to building Bridget, could you tell us one of the lower moments that you had, to maybe one of those times where you thought that you're going to have to shut the company down, but things kind of came through?
Adam, I'm a startup, a co-founder. I have so many of these stories. Well, why don't I give you two, if I may, if we have time for that. One was just starting the company. I had a fundamental thesis of saying, hey, let's use cash flow information. So that information that we just talked about, which is that's in your bank account in real time, which is your bank balance, your historical spending patterns, your income. That is a treasure trove of information, but I wanted to be able to leverage that data to help people, as we talked about, help people save, help people get money between paychecks so they don't end up overdraft from that same pain point that caused me to eat Snickers way too often at night, that fear, and being able to solve for that. And being able to find a co-founder of that too in 2017 who understood what open banking or cash flow data even was exceedingly difficult. It took me a year to find the right individual, and I got very lucky. And through a lot of hard work of banging on, I must have talked to at least 50, 60 people, and I'm not kidding. And doing that over and over again, Adam, is quite heartbreaking. Fortunately, it all worked out, and I found Hamel, who is not just a wonderful human being. We have aligned incentives in the sense that we wanted to create a company that could impact people's lives, but also be hopefully an enduring company. And his background was cash flow information in working in Brazil, for one of Palantir's clients. That pain and the amount of time it took to get the right individual, I would do it all over again, but there's always that set of fear after talking to 5, 10, 20 people that you might not find the right person. That was one of the hardest points. A quick second point is obviously COVID. We were doing really well. We went from 0 to 20 million in ARR in about the first year of launching our product. We had this team of about 15, 20 people at the time. Everything is up and to the right almost. And voila, you mentioned COVID hits. We have no idea. We fundamentally created this new piece of technology, which had at that point and now, even now, lowest default rates, highest approval rates for our instant cash product. And now we need to realize if that stuff that we'd actually built truly works in a black swan environment. That doesn't happen very often, as we all know. And the first thing we did was we made a decision to make sure we keep all our employees or teammates, as we call them, secure. We made a public statement or internal statement saying everybody's job is safe. That was step number one. But navigating through that, and you know, I'm so proud to say that at that point in time, and even till today, we have never laid anyone off. But navigating that uncertainty, which the world was going through, so it wasn't just us, but in our case, it was a piece of technology that was fundamentally new and unproven over a longer period of time, because only a year into the launch. That is the, as you can imagine, quite a nerve-wracking moment if you didn't know you'll survive the next day. But the only thing we could say, because it was under our control, was that our teammates, as long as the company was alive, would be safe.
Wow, what a, I mean, because I imagine you had pressure from your board to say, hey, you should consider.
No, they were very supportive. We were very, very fortunate to have an exceedingly supportive board. And I think the way we phrased it and why we wanted to do it, that's all that matters. And I would argue some of the best work we have ever done as a team has been in those months right after COVID. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that the board, my co-founder, myself, and others were very clear. If we go down together. Firing one or two people or laying off one or two people, three people, five people is not the way to run a company.
Mm. It created safety among the team so they could just do the right thing.
We are here to help a segment of the population that have been underserved or taken advantage of banks. We have an opportunity. The only thing we could control at that point in time was our own team and how to treat our team. And that's what we so chose to do.
That is really cool. Thank you for sharing that. Moving on to your product market fit journey, because you had clearly hit that if you had gotten to 20 million in ARR. Could you tell us the moment? What was it, a moment or kind of a month or a season when you knew you had hit product market fit?
Well, we'd spent a year doing research, just to make that clear. And the research was academic research, talking to the CFPB and other organizations who publish research, for example, on overdrafts, getting 1 billion transactions from one of the companies so we can analyze it. So we had a little bit of a start simply because we had done the work that's required to get there. And also, more importantly, talking to about 50 people before we even formally launched the company. But what had happened was we decided to create a website available to anybody and made it Google searchable or SEO optimized, where people could go in, connect their bank account, and see how much money they were spending on overdraft or other bank fees. It was mind-blowing for some of the updates that we got. We had a real-time, everybody in the team at the time, was like four or five of us at the time, we get an email when someone would sign up. We saw people spending $20,000-$30,000. I know that sounds insane. I think that was the peak on overdraft fees over the course of 2 years. Now by the end of this, we had about 5,000-10,000 people spending $2,000-$3,000 and about 30,000 people who had signed up that spent well over $1,000 on overdraft fees. That was a sign for us that, hey, there is a clear problem and we can help solve this problem for this segment of the population. Once we saw that data, we created this app, which is a very light touch, not the prettiest looking app, as you can imagine, and ended up sending messages to those same users saying, hey, we can help you try to solve the problem and bridge the gap between your paychecks. That's kind of when we started to see our first 100, 500,000 people start to use the app. Now, there are lots of iterations of the app that we had to do in terms of improve it so people could understand fundamentally how we were adding value, not just through the ability of giving people those advances, having them approved, but also some budgeting tools. But that started to get things going. But every time you saw an email when somebody signs up, or you got shocked and see how much money people were spending on Chase, Wells Fargo, you name it, and overdraft fees, that was an opportunity to make that difference.
This is really cool. I want to unpack the website that you had that helped people instantly see how much money they were spending in overdraft fees. When did you launch that within the context of that academic year that you spent like researching?
Sure. We launched that in 2017, probably 2017, early 2018. Let's call it 2018.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Got it. So you launched that in 2018 and you had already kind of done that 1 year of research. So you had some ideas, or was that kind of along the way in parallel?
We had some ideas. So it was done prior to that. Let's call it about 9 months worth of research together with this prior.
Got it. And so, but this seems just like a growth marketing test. This wasn't like, hey, how are we going to make money on this tool?
It wasn't about making money. It was about trying to, as you pointed out, right? Well, how do you get to product market fit? You got to understand the market as best as you can. And the way we did it, as I pointed out, was academically, but also talking to people out there before we even had a product. Then we got a little bit closer. We had the juice of the product is all about making sure we can connect your bank account. Remember, we don't use FICO or any other pieces of data. Everything we use is what we define as open banking, or the information in your bank account. So there was a question of how easy and can we convince people to connect their bank accounts, which subsequently this website, which we turned off, which was called My Hidden Fees, did, was it showed us a value proposition that people would connect their bank accounts. Once we realized we could do that, and there was a deeper actual need, it's one thing talking to somebody, it's another one seeing someone actually connecting a bank account and realizing, here's a real individual. Here's the set of transactions that the system has analyzed, and the system believes that they could solve this problem. That is when you have an ability to solve a deep pain point for people. And taking those same people who had the pain point, and yes, cross-selling or just showing them the app that can solve that, you can call it a hack. We just call it product market fit. At least that's a starting point.
It makes a lot of sense now that it's been done, but I'm curious like how people can apply this, because it's like a micro step, because in your business, getting someone to connect a bank account is a big deal. It shows that they trust you. And so just that, once you knew you got that, you knew you could find a way to make money afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Because it's not even a question of making money. We knew that people had intent and we could convince them to connect that bank account. Again, it's going back to 6 years ago at this point in time, so things were still early. Combined with the fact that they had a problem that they wanted to solve. You had those two points, knowing that we're a company trying to solve that problem for those users, making money becomes secondary. And in terms of how we chose to come up with a subscription plan, this is actually through one of our advisors. Hopefully you heard from us. The most important part is if you service your customer and help them solve a problem, ideally in the most seamless way possible, everything will follow. And what we needed to do from a business model standpoint is align our incentives to the end users. Our users don't want to borrow. They want to save. They want to budget more effectively. And as you see, as I mentioned, through our particular product suite, as people borrow less, save more, build their credit score, our costs actually go down and are fundamentally aligned with the user's incentives. That is very, very important, because unlike the banks that we've talked about or lenders, we want to help people get a larger saving. We don't want them to build their credit score by spending. Saving is better because that's the fundamental problem. We don't want to make money the more people borrow. We would rather make money the less they borrow. That is all about alignment.
Because you are so true to your mission at the beginning. Like, this is just amazing. I really appreciate your authenticity here and the way you've aligned it, because you had to get creative to do that. Because I'm sure there's a lot of easy off-road you could have taken to make more money sooner.
We would make a lot more money if we were to just do what traditional lenders do. It's also much harder to build a subscription-based model because all of a sudden the sticker price is higher and there's less incentive for someone who doesn't want to, there's less incentive for people to pay a larger sticker price upfront versus saying, hey, join us and I'll charge you $10 to transfer money, or I'll ask you for tips, or I'll ask you for an APR. We have a flat subscription model. And again, it is aligned to our customers.
I think that's the biggest takeaway I'm hearing right now. How did you market that first website? I can't remember the name of it. You said y'all shut it down, but how did you market that? Like,
we ran some web ads. That was, there's nothing, Facebook ads. That was, there was no TikTok back in the day. And we ran some Google ads, nothing. There was no rocket science.
I love that. Well, you had just hit the right thing because you understood who you were targeting because you had done all the research before.
Yes. That I would like to say that circumvented a lot of work and time, but that work had already been done pre-start in the company.
What were those interviews like when you were doing that research phase, like in the way you're describing the work now?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things. I think it reminded me a lot about myself. I think that's that, again, going back 20 years ago, is that fundamental stress that people are under because they don't know if there's money in the bank account. They want to be able to build their credit score, but they don't necessarily know how. And the problem being is it's a circular effect. If you have a poor credit score, you don't get access to good credit, and that helps you bridge the gap between your expenses, which are due today, and your income, which will come in 2 weeks. That is the fundamental problem that I was suffering, again, when I was in college. And unfortunately, that even about 6 years ago, when we were in the early stages, that kept happening over and over again. It's that was fundamentally clear was that unfortunately people were in stress and they wanted to find a good way to come out of it. And so that was another reasons why we had a subscription service, because it wasn't only about trying to give them money and solve that problem. People were willing and wanting to make the effort of saying, let me reduce my stress now. Once my stress is reduced, I can actually budget more effectively, get financially literate, and get to a point where I can save. That is the path that was echoed over and over again with different phrases from people. And that is the path, if you look at our product set in terms of what we built and how we built it, that's exactly what we ended up building 6 years later.
It was just by listening. I mean, there was no like specific questions that you were targeting. It was just understanding that thing and then going down to like the root of what they were saying and seeing that commonality.
It is a wonderful thing to keep quiet and listen. Ideally ask the right questions in a non-biased manner and just listen. And despite the fact that we serve the widest population in the United States, which in essence looks like the median American, the reality is they are all fundamentally obviously have very personal goals and are different stages of journey, different financial journeys. But the reality is if you take them as a whole, the fundamental problem, as we talked about, still tends to be the same. People, almost 90% of our country are in financial stress caused because of the reasons that we've talked about, living paycheck to paycheck, not having a credit score that the system acknowledges your relative risk worthiness. And the last thing is not having enough savings. That is the core of the pain points in our country.
So good. Well, last question is just what's something you wish you could tell yourself if you could go back to the beginning of this journey, like right when you started the research?
Work faster. Sometimes having too much research is not necessarily a good thing. Jump into the real world faster. I would have gotten a lot of those answers in the real world sooner than some of the academic work that we had done.
I definitely resonate with that. I talked to way too many people at my research phase. And it's like, you feel safer in that because you're not going to get whacked in the face. They're like, no, we're not interested. We're not, or whatever it is.
Yeah. It's prolonging the nose, which will happen. But to be clear, that's part of the journey. Like one of the things I would say for founders is be able to take the nose because there will be a lot of them.
There's no way around it. Zubin, thank you. This has been amazing.
Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening. If you want to learn more about Zendesk for Startups, check out our website, zendesk.com/startups. Also, we're always looking to improve, so don't hesitate to email me with any feedback on how we can ask better questions, guests to target, or anything else that we can do to better help you as a founder. My email is adam.odonnell@zendesk.com.